Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 15 of Call Center Confidence. I'm Jason Cutter.
And I'm Oliver Katt.
We didn't practice that, but that was good.
Oh, no. You caught me off guard there a little bit. Anyway, hang on.
I thought I would just try and mix it up. You know, the life of sales, call centers, all that stuff is very much on your toes. As much as you'd like to plan what's going to happen in a call center or with a sales team or with your training or everything that we've talked about for 14 weeks now, 14 hours of content, planning would be great. But sometimes you just got to be ready.
No, 100%. Love it. And here we are, live, living the dream, unedited, talking all things call center related. And today, what are we talking about?
Well, and if people want the edited version of this, make sure to check out the podcast, which is now available, where we cut out a lot of this stuff. It works out to be about 8 minutes of content. No, just kidding. It's the full unedited episodes, but that would be pretty funny. You know what? Today, let's just dive right into it. Our plan, what we want to talk about is continuing, as we have been, where we've been, where we're going, is talking about progression plans or, depending on how they're referred to in what part of the world or the organization, succession plans, which is that people are here and there is a actual thought out process that is clear of where they could be if they play their cards right.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love the way you said could be, you know, because we all know nothing in life is guaranteed, especially a cheeky little promotion into leadership. But the thing is, it's important to start early in my book, especially when it comes to something like this. And, you know, you want to be looking at your progression, your team's progression, which are two very big things. And of course, succession planning. I've worked for companies before that won't allow you to move up until you built your successor and baked them in ready to go. So we're going to start straight away and we're going to talk about progression plans for teams. Isn't that right, Jason?
Yeah, let's do it. So I think one of the biggest things, and I want to, you know, throw it to you on this, is that a lot of times I see organizations where they don't have a plan. It's kind of like, hey, we need to move Bob up, or Bob has said, I would like to move up. What do you have for me? Where is a better place to start that you've seen more on the intentional pre-planned determined side?
I think when it's pre-planned, obviously you got to kind of make a move pretty quickly. You know, there's no sitting around if we're looking at moving Bob up. I mean, we've got to put a lot of things in place very quickly. But again, it depends on the timeline of the company. I've worked with companies where it's like, hey, we're going to move Bob up. We want to promote him. We've got to get him ready to go. But then they sit there for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, whatever it might be. But the question is, does Bob know about it? What have you experienced? Is Bob usually told about these promotions before it happens, or is it thrust upon them?
Sometimes, and this is a term that I heard a while ago when working with the military, is voluntold, which is, you know, hey, we want to move Bob up. By the way, Bob, we want to move you up. And, you know, hopefully it's with their desire and goal. But a lot of times it's just thrust upon them. Sometimes, like you said, it's very urgent and reactionary, right? Like there's a gap, somebody's gone and you need to play chess or maybe more checkers and get somebody in place really quick. And you've got to do that. Other times I've seen it within organizations where it's like, okay, we want to move this person up. What do we need to do? What do we need to put in place? How can we start grooming them in advance or building the position or being intentional about what they're walking into? I think that's a big key is, okay, so let's say somebody's not there anymore, something happened, and let's just call it like it is, that it was a failure on somebody's behalf, right? The company or the individual, somebody failed in that role, right? It's not always the person. Usually it falls on the company or the leadership. The person failed in that role to be successful. Now you're looking at moving someone else into that place. The best way to go about it is to ensure that the next person doesn't fail and that they have the right tools. So sometimes it's about building everything around them or analyzing, okay, why did this person not succeed at their mission? What were they missing? How can we do it right for the next generation?
Yeah, and I think that's a, it's a very valid point because, you know, you move this person in because there's this failure on one part or the other. There's a lot of things you've got to put into place as a business. And unfortunately, a lot of companies don't, I say not don't, but they aren't prepared for this type of situation. As you kind of mentioned a minute ago, it's person A's gone. Let's throw in person B in there very quickly. And then what happens? We see that never-ending cycle of failure of leadership because they haven't been ready off the bat. So there's a lot of things we can put into place very quickly as a business. The first things is to kind of look at the person that's going in there. Do they have the skill set? Do they have what they need? And if not, how do we give them the tools to do that? And in my opinion, it's about sitting down, training them one-on-one or as part of a team under a leadership program to get them up and running. I think I alluded to last week, it's about, you know, a lot of people in terms of when they're wanting to be groomed, they have the luxury of going through a training program. They have the ability to sit down with people and learn from before they even step foot into that role. In this situation, it's moving quick. We know that especially BPOs work a lot quicker sometimes than in-house call centers, specifically with promotions and moving people in, and if they're doing it internally. So for me, it's about sitting down with them one-on-one or as a group if we're doing leadership training and look at the way they communicate with their team. I think communication is probably one of the biggest, first and foremost, for any leader stepping into their role, because if they can't communicate with their team, there's a block straight away, in my opinion. It's about looking at how they, you know, keep everybody involved. They get their buy-in, because if you're not getting those people's buy-in or the team's buy-in, you're not going to be leading straight off the bat. I mean, I've walked in before where the team already has the apprehension of somebody new moving in and they're already worried about. I actually saw a meme the other day that was, I hold my hands up here. I know some people are probably going to go, what have you been living under a rock? The answer is, well, probably because I haven't watched it, but Game of Thrones. Are you a fan? Are you a fan of Game of Thrones?
Fan, I would say no. Familiar, I did watch all eight seasons. I did it pretty quick though, so I'm not as emotionally attached as others, but I'm pretty aware. Yes,
fair enough. Well, there was a meme for, I'm guessing it was from Game of Thrones. It looked like Sean Bean up in the picture, but the caption that came with it was "Brace yourself, here comes another leader." Which obviously, from what I understand, is people just chop and change in that program. And I think people forget that. You know, we haven't got to worry about managing up. We haven't got to worry about managing across on that kind of plateau. But you've also got the apprehension of the team having churned a recent team member or a team leader is now all of a sudden having a new manager thrust upon them. And it's like, are they going to survive? Are they going to get through this? Are they going to be here tomorrow when they realize what they actually have to do in this role? And I think that's the company's responsibility to actually prepare that new leader for what's coming down the pipe. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's about preparing the leader. It's also about setting the right expectation with the team. And then I think fundamentally it comes down to responsibility. This is the biggest thing that I see in terms of this, but also, you know, a general principle that applies is that a lot of companies don't necessarily take full responsibility for.
Sorry, I'm being attacked by a wasp in my office.
That's all right. You take care of that. Give people can watch that. They listen to me. You know, I think one of the biggest things is that companies don't necessarily take responsibility for what's not working. a lot of times if there's a finger that's being pointed, it's the salespeople aren't doing their job, the managers aren't doing their job. But then the question is the company providing all the tools, the training, the mentorship, the coaching, everything to support them, right? Mm-hmm. Are they giving them everything possible to help them win, the salespeople, the managers, the leaders? Or are they abdicating it and then just hoping that they know how to do it? There's been many times in organizations where I've stepped in my role, especially consulting, and it's clear that there's a ton of things missing. The training program isn't there, the coaching program, accountability, the comp plans. Like, there's so many holes in the sales operation that it's clear from the outside that the problem with not succeeding isn't the reps or the managers, it's the organization and how it's been built. And so it's about taking responsibility. And then that goes to your point where people are moving up and they just basically keep failing as managers, and everyone's basically, they don't trust the process. They don't trust the leadership. At some point, the company needs to step up and say, all right, we realize we've been doing this wrong. We've been just throwing people into this. We've been assuming that they're going to be good leaders.
I lost Jason there at that point. I hope I'm still here. I'm talking to myself. I completely lost you there, that last part.
I'm still here. I can hear you. I can hear me. But, you know, I think the big key is that companies step up and take responsibility for where they have let the team down and then what they're going to do to make it different, and then put the resources into actually building that up so that people trust the progression. Because here's one of the things that I know based on what you're saying is that a lot of times people don't want to step up or don't want to move up in the organization or don't want to move around in the organization because they've seen so many others fail that people stop raising their hands, right?
Yep. And you know what? There are so, I mean, I could talk for hours on the reasons why people don't want to move up. I was actually witness to a conversation of a client of mine the other day, and it was about building something as a progression plan, as a succession plan, and building that kind of leadership culture within the industry. And they just turned around to me and went, and I was sat with them, and they went on a Zoom call and went, and this is exactly why people do not want to be promoted in my company. And they screen shared an email with me, which showed them the commission plans. And you've got some reps earning $3,000, you know, a month, $2,000 a month, then team leaders earning $1,000 a month, then managers earning $500 a month. I'm like, okay, granted, base salary, yes, it's there. Responsibility is there, which is why you get paid more to do more. But essentially, you know, you're there. And we sat down and we reworked the comp plan, which actually worked out better for the team managers and the team leaders. But that was one of the biggest issues. And again, part of the reason why some of these people do fail, because they get paid low-end salary, they step in, they don't feel incentivized, and they move on. I mean, there's a lot of reasons out there why people don't want to move up. I mean, look, guys, those of you that are listening out there, please message, please tell us why you think or why you haven't seen people move up in your organizations. But I completely agree. I think the crux of it, I always boil down to three M's: money, motivation, and management. And if you're not being managed correctly, you're not being given the training, which all boils down to the same thing, then these team leaders are either going to be forcibly removed out of the door, or they're going to walk out the door because they don't feel like they've had that support. And nobody wants to walk out the door because they haven't had support. But I think at the same time, there's still a lot of people out there that are afraid to hold their hands up and ask for help.
So what can companies do, in your experience, to, let's tackle this part first, to give people the hope, meaning that if they move up, they will be successful, and so they will want to move up instead of moving out? What can companies do to ensure people feel like it's going to be a good decision, not the death of them?
Do you know what? I think the first and foremost that people want is the support. And if companies can show that they have either a leadership program in place, or that they have a developmental leadership program in place. So, you know, your pre-manager, or, you know, when you're post-manager, what's your training look like? If companies can have that and they can sing and dance about it, like shout it from the rooftops, hey guys, look, We've got a leadership development plan in place. Those of you that want to go on it, we want you to go on it. We want to show you that we are here to support you. I guarantee you are going to get people that want to sign up to that. And that, you know, it's as simple as that. Career progression nowadays is what people want. All right. Don't get me wrong. They all want the work-life balance. They all want the compensation and the money to kind of fill their back pockets. Granted. But you know what? Those come with time. But if you can show somebody you're going to give them training, you're going to invest in training, then that goes a long way. I wrote a post, 6 months ago now, that boiled back down to the budgets that certain companies spend on their team, especially to go through training and things like that. And the average number last year, now again, I don't know whether this was a COVID number that I researched. I don't know whether it was post, pre, or whatever. But it was a live, accurate figure from a recent survey, was about $1,100 per person per year for training. Now, that goes nowhere in my book. And that's an average. No, don't get me wrong. You're going to have some companies that spend $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, but you're going to have companies that spend nothing. And some of the comments I actually received at that point were nothing because, I didn't get any training this month. I didn't get any training these last 6 months. Now, again, COVID aside, these things happen, right? Pre-COVID, we're now coming into hopefully a post-COVID era. But $1,000, what could you do for somebody for $1,000 for a year? And that doesn't include things like, you know, e-learning licenses, which costs, you know, $100 a year. Things like that. You take all of these software and platforms out of it. It's not very much. I'd love to hear what everybody else's budgets are. If you're hearing this, please share your budgets secretly.
Yeah, I think that is fascinating. I mean, you know, what's interesting is I see companies who do that and try to put in some training, some platforms, things like that, which are inexpensive. And essentially it's videos. It's here, watch these videos and this should get you ready. And I think videos can be good for the right people who learn really well in videos, but videos are never enough as well. Like, no. You know, it's like, okay, let's watch a video about swimming and then jump in the pool and swim. Good luck. Right. Hopefully that goes well for you. We watched, you know, 6 hours of videos and you got it now. Right. And all of that goes out of the window as soon as you hit the water, because you don't remember in the moment. And so same thing with the training, with the leadership, with the development, you know, it's that balance. You know, Neil put a comment in here. He's talking about hit by COVID, for example, shrinking higher management places, limiting the potential to move up, which then makes a interesting thing, not just in COVID times, pre-COVID, post-COVID, just in general, if a company's struggling, less management opportunities, then it's going to be harder for people to move up. And then are they going to stay or are they going to leave? You're going to lose your good people to other organizations, which have more opportunities. And so then it just becomes this vicious cycle in my experience, which is because you're struggling, you don't have opportunities. Because there's no opportunities, people don't want to stay on what feels like a sinking ship or something that's not going to help them get further and further. And then the business shrinks and people leave, and then it just goes around and around. Yeah. And sometimes you have to fix the fundamental problems, and constricting sometimes is necessary in the moment, but usually there's some other things that are missing.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. And I think, you know, for companies that are shrinking at the minute, I know it's tough, but I did see, knowing Neil for many years from the UK, so thanks for joining in, Neil. Thanks for tuning in. I think the UK is going through one of the highest job vacancy booms it's ever been through in God knows how long. I saw that in the press yesterday. I think there's something like another million jobs that have been created now. Obviously, how these are happening, what's going on, I don't know. I can't comment on that. But hopefully, fingers crossed, coming out the back end of COVID, there are going to be those kind of managerial positions as businesses start to grow. Mm-hmm. Because we will start to see that growth. But touching on Neil's other comment that he's made as well, generic training does little to develop individual strengths. And I think, Jason, you know, you hit that point perfectly. as you went through that. You know, we all know that 70% of what we learn is done through on-the-job training. You know, if you're teaching somebody to swim, 70% is actually being in the water, not just watching a video. I took my paddy scuba diving course last year. The book gave me nothing. Everything was about being in the water and learning how to breathe successfully. But it's the same with what we do, and it's the same with call centers. You know, you have your e-learning platforms. Great, great. Everyone loves an e-learning platform. Yeah, here you go. Content, whether it's video, PowerPoint, PDF, documents. But nothing will ever replace a trainer. You know, they talk about all these robotic things that are going to start replacing people in the future. All right, fair enough. Yes, they probably will somewhere along the line, but nothing beats somebody showing you how to do it in person, talking you through it, training you to what you need to go out there and do. And I think that makes a big impact. And as you say, learning styles vary. Video, book, physically doing the job. I'm not going to go into the official names because, you know, it can be complicated for other people. But, you know, you do have those different types of learning styles that people pick up from. For me, I like to learn how to do stuff. If I break something, I like to pull it apart and fix it myself until eventually I do have to watch a YouTube video and they have to talk me through how to fix it, because normally I've screwed it up in the long term. But going back to what we're trying to talk about here, and in a nutshell, in looking at these progression plans and building this, companies, please, if you are advertising and you want to promote people, you want to create progression for somebody, put a leadership program in place. It's something that Jason and I can both talk to you about separately. We can jump on a call if you've got any ideas, if you're struggling to do it or how you're wanting to do it. There's so many ways to structure it. There is no rule book. There's no right way or wrong way to do it, but you do need to give people the tools to do it. I think we alluded to it last week when we talked about a leadership development program, having things like, you know, shadowing a leader, learning how to go through an interview for a leadership role, not to give you the answers, but how to mentally prepare yourself for it, how to look at managing a team through coaching a team, understanding teams when you actually get into that dynamic. That's your kind of leadership development program. When you're post leader, there's other areas that you can look at, which are things like reviewing their management style, 360 degree feedback being a big thing. If you can gather that feedback on those leaders so that you can sit down and coach them and talk to them. Again, alluding back to another episode, we spoke about coaching, mentoring. You know, we kind of broke those down, how they are different. And if you can put those into place for your leaders, then that's a great role. I spoke to a potential client the other day who wants to talk about executive coaching. They want to put their CFOs, CEOs, directors, exec suites, C-suites through coaching. And do you know what? How many companies can turn around and physically say on a percentage base that I'm putting my C-suite through coaching?
Yeah.
I don't know many that do that. I know there are positions for it. I know it happens. But in the grand scale of things, it's not that many.
No, and most of the times when I see that, it's the individual themselves getting their own coach or paying for their own coaching.
Yeah.
And it's because they want to grow and they want to develop and they want to learn and they want to break past where they are now, because, you know, where each of us are in our lives right now and what we have, business, finance, health, everything is relative to what we know and what we've done. And so if you want to get to a new level, you have to essentially change and grow. And what's interesting, though, and I don't have any stats on this, is the number of people who pay for their own coaching within an organization and how much, if they are going to stay there, if they're going to move up, or if they're going to realize, wait a second, like if I'm doing this and I'm supporting myself and my team, like my company isn't, maybe I'll go find another more supportive company, right? That might be more interested in helping me.
Yeah. And do you know what? To be honest with you, at the point you just raised, there are a lot of people out there that pay for your own coach. I'm connected and I have a lot of excellent relationships with business coaches, with sales coaches, with company coaches. Obviously, I'm in that industry, and as you are, Jason. And I actually spoke to one of them on a Zoom call. We were chatting the other day, and his client list is huge. Don't get me wrong. He's great at what he does. He does a very good job of doing it. He's very prominent on LinkedIn, but I'm not going to give you his name because obviously I don't want to spoil any information out there. But there's a client base for it. There's a demand for it. And I know he charges a lot of money, but the results this guy gets is incredible. Incredible.
That's always the key. So let's shift a little bit. I want to go more proactive. I want to have this conversation be more proactive. So far what we've talked about is the reactive-ish nature of when a company says, we need a new leader, we got to move up somebody, we got to move up Bob, Karen is ready, let's go, let's move them up into a leadership management role. And so they're moving that forward. I have found much more success and a demand from employees, especially new hires, well before that, which is when they're walking into the company, when they're walking into a role, knowing what the rules of the game are and how they can move up or around if that fits them. Now, one caveat is that sometimes people assume, oh, everyone's going to want to move up. No, not everyone wants to move up. There's a lot of people who get into a sales role. They're very happy being in a sales role. That's their highest and best value. It makes them the happiest. They can bring the most success to that role. They are better salespeople than leaders. They know that. You should recognize and support that. I see some companies who try to move people up instead of leaving them where they are. Some people really, if they've had leadership experience in the past, especially if it's gone bad, they enjoy the thought of getting into a role. And when the timer goes off at the end of the day and they clock out, they're no longer having to deal with the mess or the drama. They like having a job and then leaving and then, you know, not having that responsibility. So, but I think the biggest thing is companies to be more and more proactive, which is build it before you have the people, which is, okay, so when we have a new person, what does that look like for them? What have you seen when it comes to those kind of plans where it's like this new hire or even this recruit during recruiting is being told, hey, by the way, if you want to move up or if you want to become a leader or do this or become a trainer, here's how that looks. Here's what that looks like. Here's how that works. What have you seen successful in that? And then what have you, what kind of parameters, what kind of rules, what kind of, again, what kind of rules to the game have you seen?
Just to reiterate that question, you're asking about new versus existing internal promotions, right?
I'm talking about proactive really far in advance, which is everybody, even if they're new walking into the organization, knows how they can move up and what it takes to move up. Hey, it's Jason Cutter of Cutter and Cat. We'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success you want for them. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps from where you are now to where you'd like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's with training, systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything in between, email info@callcenterconfidence.com today, and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we might be able to help you. And now back to Oliver and I chatting about call centers.
I think that boils down to the company values of bringing the right person in. Just looking at a new recruit, for example, I've worked with clients that have wanted to bring certain personnel in from an external standpoint. And in the interview process, you know, they talk about quick progression. This is how you do it. This is what you need to achieve. And this is where you need to go. And that sets the tone. I think some companies fail where they turn around and say, hey, when you come in here, you can be a director in 6 months. And then 2 years later, they're still nowhere near a director's role. That's setting expectations in a wrong environment, just maybe to sell the role to somebody you think will be great for the now, to bring them in quickly. But I think setting the tone for everyone when they know is if you can turn around and show, and I look, I'm guessing it, but I boil it down to this one thing, and I hope I'm answering your question the right way. If you can show that a majority of your internal staff are now in senior management positions who have grown with the company, you're proving more than anything that you've primarily focused on internal recruitment and internal development than anything else. Now, don't get me wrong. some companies bring in somebody from an external standpoint if there's a genuine knowledge gap. And if, like, you know, the immediate training won't suffice for that person to come in here. When I was brought in as a director for one of my previous companies, I was brought in because, you know, the person, I don't want to say beneath me, but my direct report, should I say, was probably a year or two off stepping into my shoes. So at that point, they needed to bring me in externally to start, you know, building that succession plan. So when I did leave, somebody could fill those shoes. Somebody could step in there and do it. And I have left. Unfortunately, they are not in that position yet because they've filled it with somebody else. But, you know, I feel that that person is more or less ready to do that. One of the great companies that I worked for back in London before I left, I would have said that 80% of the senior management were people that had been with the company 2, 3, 5+ years. I know some people that have been there 9 years, 10 years and worked for that same company, and they'd worked their way up. Somebody I saw on LinkedIn who I've known for a couple of years now just celebrated 30 years at a company. Now, some beg the question, is that too long to stand at a company? But they started at the bottom and now they are the head honcho in their field and they're their top dog. So what's the lesser of two evils? Do you want to work your way up and then move on? Or do you want to work your way up and stay put if the position's right? What would you do?
Well, I think I love your perspective on that and where you took my question, which is not what I was thinking, which we'll talk about in a minute. But
so did I answer I think correctly
it is,
or no?
No, it's all good. I think it's more valuable because it's also setting that stage of, you know, because I see this where companies say, hey, you can move up and we have all these opportunities. And then the proof doesn't validate that, right? Because when you look at the people who are moved up or in those positions, it's not internal, or it's from other departments, or they don't last very long. And it's not like the actions aren't corresponding with what's being said. As far as your question, though, it's like, you know, stay there that long, move up, leave the company. I think as long as somebody is successful and they're motivated and they're getting results, that's all that matters. I mean, if somebody's there for 30 years and they're still making things happen and the company and the people under them are successful, then that's great. There's also, you know, as long as it's a fit for the culture of the company, there's a lot of value for that intellectual knowledge, that head knowledge that comes with someone who's been in an organization a long time where they know things, right? And they can help people. It's the old guy around the campfire that is telling stories to all the kids and telling them how things, you know, used to be, where, you know, they've got that knowledge, right? That information. Let me tell you about a time when, you know, people, you know, if you want to call somebody while you're driving, you had to stop and find a payphone and then, you know, ring somebody because he didn't have a cell phone. Or when your beeper went off, you had to pull over and try to find a phone. You know, so I think there's a lot of value in some of that knowledge being in there. What's fascinating is sports teams, because I keep seeing these headlines, let's say basketball, U.S. basketball, where there's some veteran players who are getting paid like the minimum. They'll get paid like $1 million, $2 million, and they don't play. They don't play at all on the team, but they've been in the league so long that they're basically a mentor to all the younger players, and they're providing that guidance. So sometimes that's just valuable in itself. But the question, what I want, I think, is valuable for companies to understand, in what I was kind of leading to earlier, is that what I found successful is that when people start with an organization, they're going to sit down, and the ones that aspire to more, the ones that you really want, the ones who want to do more than just clock in and clock out and take their breaks and do like as little as possible to collect a check. You want the people who are aspiring to learning more, to moving up, to moving around, to developing themselves. Even if you know in 2 years, they're going to max out, they're going to want to go do something else, at least you can get good 2 years out of them, is to have that roadmap in advance. I've actually made that a part of the recruiting process and the interview process, is to show the flowchart roadmap of here's where you could go, here's the opportunities, and then here's the requirements, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one that's important in recruiting, onboarding, in training, and then constantly let people know. It's like, if you aspire to moving up, here's what it takes. You have to do this many sales. You have to have this kind of QA score. You have to do it in this much of a time frame. If you want to be a team lead, you have to be able to do this. There's some metrics, right? Some KPIs mm-hmm. that you have to accomplish, where if somebody's eager and motivated, hey, here's the rules. You hit these numbers, then we'll talk about moving up. Or if there's a position, we'll move you up. Have you seen that kind of super proactivity, like pre-planning, just outlining the whole board and board game?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some. I mean, I worked with a sales team a couple of years ago that their promotions were based on KPI deliveries. Now, the problem you have with that, in some instances, if it's not managed correctly, is your managers just yo-yo and they go up and down. I'll give you an example of this, and let me know what you think, right? So the sales team wanted to instill promotion within the managers, give you some direction and say, hey, this is where you're going to go. And these are your KPIs. These are your metrics. Did they always give them leadership training? Yes, ish. But what would happen is we would be on the phones and it'd be like, right, okay, Jason, when you get to X amount of sales, or if it was in the field, for example, with the field sales team, and it was the same kind of pattern in two separate channels. Mm-hmm. You hit X, you become a regional manager, right?
Okay.
So then you manage that region, or in the call center, you become this bank manager of these people. But at that point, you know, you'd end up earning commission off of the people beneath you and things like that. But as the manager, you were then still expected to jump on the phones or go into businesses and sell the product at the same time. But your pay was higher. You weren't more of everyone else, but your sales target was lower because obviously they wanted you to manage, support, and coach at the same time. Because the more you coach, the more sales you got your team to make, the more money you made. Kind of like a pyramid, the way it goes up. Mm-hmm. Then off of the back of that, there was area manager. So that, you know, your regionals were set to area. But the problem is, if you didn't hit your regional target or your managerial target, you'd kind of yo-yo, and you could go from area manager back down onto the front line because you weren't hitting targets. And it was like a 1 month, oh no, you failed, you hit your metric, you were relegated. And then, oh, again, you were relegated again. And you would just go up and down. And I felt that was very inconsistent. But at the same time, it was that reward versus that risk versus, are you doing it? But then when people did get put back into their boots on the ground, i.e. the phones or in the field, you'd end up losing that person and all the money and time that you invested in that person because they were somebody's manager and now they're working alongside them again.
Yeah.
So yes and no. I mean, in an ideal way, you want to hit the metrics and then that person stays where they are. Then you train them as a reward, which is what I'm kind of, I think you're alluding to. So once you get to those metrics and you hit those markers, you get promoted, you get trained. You've now got targets to get promoted again. There's no demotion in there. I take it the demotion from your side would kind of disappear, right?
Yeah. So, well, on the demotion side, one thing I found is that just doesn't work. I understand it. I really appreciate that, the model you're talking about, because it removes the subjectivity of, like, we move somebody up and we like them even though they suck. We don't want to move them down because we like them. We're buddies. We go to lunch together. Like, you know, I'm protecting that person. When you're talking about these clear metrics and clear KPIs, then it's not subjective anymore. It's not, hey, yeah, I like Karen, so I'm going to leave her in place. Bob's doing an okay job, but, you know, other people aren't, but I'm going to keep him. Like, it gets rid of that. What I have found mentally is that most people can't handle going backwards. Get mm-hmm. promoted to a team lead, a sales manager, branch manager, whatever that looks like, and they're not cutting it for some reason, and then moving them back mentally, emotionally, morale-wise, most people can't swing that unless they really didn't want to be promoted in the first place and they kind of went along with it because they were worried if they didn't say yes, they might get in trouble or get fired or, you know, be put on the bad list. But if somebody wanted it and asked for it and then failed, and then you've got to move them backwards, it doesn't work out. And what I have found is that when people ask to move up, depending on the role, for most roles like they're moving into, I make sure to let them know it's a one-way trip. It's not going to work because A, it's they get back and then they're toxic and it's going to poison whatever group they're now back in. And then just mentally, it's not going to work for them. I've done that a few times and then I learned like, this is going to be a one-way trip. If you're going to move up to manager, if this doesn't work out, like there is no going back.
Yeah. I agree with that. And I want to address some of these comments in a second, but just off the back of that very quickly, there is no going back. I agree with that. I'm a firm believer of that. Where would you stand or what's your opinion on you give somebody a promotion or a side move for a 3 month or a 6 month trial? And then obviously they don't fit the bill, they go back. Now, in my experience, I don't have the luxury to hold a previous position open for the person that's been moved somewhere else in the business. So I need to backfill that now. Somebody can't do a 6 month tryout, you know, a try before you buy. You get where I'm going with this. What's your thoughts on that very quickly?
So I think it depends. I mean, I love the trial idea. I've never done a specific trial where it's like, hey, let's try this for 3 months and see. I have done some where it's like, okay, we want to expand and we're going to test this out. Usually what it is somebody who wants to move up into a different role, trainer, team lead, manager, let's say, you know, whatever up means from where they're at, up or over. They want to, but the performance and the metrics aren't there. So their desire is there. The attitude is maybe there, but some KPI is missing. They really want to be a team lead, but they're not really closing enough deals. Now, maybe they would make a better team lead than a salesperson, right? Some people are better teachers and leaders than they are salespeople, which is great once you figure that out. So I've had that where it's like, okay, we'll try this out for a couple months. If it doesn't work, we'll put you back. Now, usually there is a role. There's always seats to fill in the sales role. So for somebody to go backwards, so it makes sense. Where I've seen it not work, like what you're saying, is where they're a team lead, they want to be a trainer. Once they become that trainer, test for a few months, that team lead spot has had to have been filled. Can't just be vacant. Can't have a bunch of salespeople with no leader. And so if it doesn't work, now what? Back to sales rep, something else, meeting with HR. I don't know. Sometimes it's come where there's been an absence. So somebody's on an extended leave. And it's like, hey, can you fill in for this person? Also, this will be your trial and test. And then it's no harm, no foul. Then it's like, hey, we needed this. You wanted this. Person comes back. It's very reversible. So I think it's also in that setup too.
Well, no, exactly. And kind of linking the comments back to previously and now, you know, Rich, evening, welcome. Thanks for joining us. You know, his comment sounds like that would eventually demotivate the sales guys. 100%. 100%. In all of those scenarios. You would end up demotivating them, or demotivating them, should I say?
Yeah.
And nobody would then want to progress.
No, because they see the damage, right? They see what it's like when somebody fails and comes back, and just I don't want to touch that stove, and get burned, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and again, following on from his next one, some of the best salespeople I have known have had no interest in being promoted because, do you know what? They're happy doing what they do. They enjoy doing what they do. They don't have the responsibility. They can come in at 9. They can leave at 6 or whatever their shift pattern may be. And do you know what? They can walk away with a ton of money. You know, I've seen frontline call center sales reps earning 50 to 60 grand more than their call center managers in base salary, commission, etc., because they're so good at what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference. But then, you know, some people want the title, they want the progression, they want the fact that they're not on the front line selling anymore. You know, they burn out. And again, what is the average tenure of a salesperson before they burn themselves out and they want to move into something new? It happens. But, you know, again, depends on the mindset. Some people can sit there for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. I know some people now that have been on the phones in one particular company for about 12 years. Why? Because they love what they're doing. They love helping customers. They love solving somebody's problem with the product and service that they sell. And do you know what? They make a pretty penny doing it. Bottom line.
Yeah. 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 I think that's, I think it's key. So one of the big takeaways from that is if you're going to do it, mostly it's going to be a one-way trip. You got to keep that in mind. You got to build that. And then to what I was talking about as well is one of the biggest things is to set the parameters for the game, right? So what I've done in the past is said, okay, so when you hit this many sales, when you hit 300 sales, right, depending on the cadence of sales per day, you hit 300 sales, you can then move up, right? Like you've proven you've done enough. You've had enough at bats. That means you've talked to thousands of people to close those 300 sales, which means you've proven that you know what you're doing. Now, here's the part. Here's the big caution I have for companies. If you're going to do that and put that in place and say, here's how you move up. And then here's the milestones you have to hit to get to the option of moving up, right? Is to also look at all of the parameters, kind of like we talked about the comp plan early on in our discussion, which is don't just say 300 sales. Because someone will get 300 dirty sales, right? Their QA scores will suck. Their compliance will suck. The retention's not there. They're closing deals that are all canceling. The company's got more complaints than it can handle, complaints than sales. And so you want to make sure all of the parameters of the game, like attendance. You don't want somebody who, yeah, they close lots of sales, but they're always late. They don't like coming in. Their attitude sucks. Their compliance sucks. You know, their CRM adherence, their technology usage, whatever it is, like, do you want that person to be a leader? Because what kind of leader are they going to be? And how are they going to teach other people? And those other people, are they going to grow up to be in line with what you want as an organization? So I think that's the biggest caution is to make sure if you put those milestones in place, you put the rules out there so everyone knows here's how you do it, that you build that as complete as your comp plan to ensure, again, what you're looking for is to ensure that you've closed as many of the loopholes as possible because people, especially salespeople, will always do what they can to find those loopholes or charge through them. And you got to be careful what kind of person you're moving up and then, again, what they're going to teach to other people.
And that's why when these people come in, you know, not only are you, you're already incentivizing them on the floor as a rep or as a salesperson or whatever it is they're doing, don't be afraid to incentivize your managers as well. I think, look, there's a comment here from Neil. I don't know if we're going to get the whole comment on the screen here, but he says, I remember battling against higher management for internal promotion of a team member. They wanted the post filled for convenience, so they met the agreed salary straight away. I wanted to have the salary cap pending for the training and create an incentive. I think that's a very great point, Neil. Look, no, there is no harm in incentivizing managers because then you're going to drive their incentive to do better and to do well. You know, for me, I going back to what we talked about earlier, you got agents with $2,000 commission, leaders with a grand commission, managers with $500 commission. In my opinion, and this isn't to say, you know, you should screw over comp plans and incentives and things like that, especially if it's working against what you're trying to achieve as a business. But in my personal opinion, you incentivize the managers to incentivize the team. One of my very first call center jobs, I think the comp plan for the managers was great. And their incentive was an average of their entire sales team. And then the operations manager was an average of all the team managers. And then the call center manager had an average of the two or three operations managers. And it was a sliding scale all the way up. And what was great is, you know, you're then incentivized not just to drill your top performers, but to also drill your bottom performers. Because at that point, you're only as good as your weakest link. If you're getting an average, you're screwed. If you've got somebody going, oh, do you know what? Bob, he's smashing $5,000 every month. I'm happy with that. But then you've got the rest of the team scraping a grand. Your commission is going to be back down to about what? 1,100? 1,200? It's going to be nowhere near your top performer. Now, that's not to say some companies do it differently because they pay higher and the scale's higher. But incentivize them. Show the risk versus the reward. But Leo, I love your idea. Training and comp plans, incentives, 100% for team leaders. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think you always have to, especially in the world of sales, right? Like, I think if the right people who are part of the team, they're all motivated to perform and get results. Why in sales in particular? Because this comes up all the time. It's like, well, salespeople like money. It's not as much that as I think what it really is in my experience is sales is tough. Sales is full of failure. Sales is a struggle, even when you're amazing and successful, right? If you have an amazing closing percentage, maybe you're at 20, 30%, depending on your industry and your lead type, which means you're losing more than you're winning. And so to sustain that, to keep everyone excited, to be, you know, fighting a battle where you're losing more times than you're winning each day, and to get up and do it again every day and be like, I'm excited to lose more times, like fail at closing deals more times than I win for the chance of winning, right? It's kind of like gambler's feeling where it's like, all right, I'm losing a lot of hands, but you know, the next one, when I get that, that offsets it. Then you've got to incentivize everybody. And I love your idea about the averages of the people below whatever that group is. I've also put things in place pretty wild because what I've found is that some managers would then live on that average and be okay with that, where let's say half the people are doing well and half the people underneath them are failing, but the company is not okay with that because then there's this turnover or there's a bunch of people failing and the manager isn't managing everybody up enough. I mean, 80-20 rule always applies. There's always going to be somebody at the bottom, but there shouldn't be too many at the bottom. And I've literally built parameters in place where it's like, you can only have so many people at the bottom underperforming or else it's you, right? Like you have to coach people up. And I've also put parameters in place. They just can't fire everybody who's not performing so that they save themselves because then that's the other option, right? Oh, if everyone has to be winning, oh, I'll just fire the people who are losing. And that way I'm winning. But it's like, no, put a parameter in for that as well. So to our succession plan, I think, you know, and Rich, you said it here, always a team game, average the team stats. I think that's important. As long as the average is good, as long as you have the right amount of people you know are going to be winning that are not winning. And again, I think this succession plan, this topic for today and the progression plan is being intentional. If you're running a call center, if you're running a sales team inside, outside, doesn't matter, whatever that sales looks like, is be intentional with what it looks like for somebody to follow the roadmap to be able to be considered for a move up or move over within the organization. Have that outline. Again, the biggest thing I've learned is that will help avoid the subjectivity of like, why did Kevin get moved up? And why did Carol not get moved up when it came time for a promotion, right? It removes that. Instead, it's like, okay, who has the stats? And everyone knows it. Here's everyone's stats. Here's everyone's metrics. When it comes time to move somebody up, it's very clear who's going to be the top of that list. Whether they, if they want it, then they can do it. And I think that's the key because then that sets it up and the right people will go after it. Other people will be happy in their role, right?
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right there. And I think there's a lot of ways to do it. You know, we could talk about this kind of stuff for everyone, for every day. And again, you know, I think, I don't know if you covered Rich's penultimate point up here is leadership is not for everyone. Companies should not force square pegs into round holes. And that is, that's a right thing. And, you know, for me, I think there are so many things that companies can do to be successful in this area, to put the right people in, to deliver the right people into the right roles and right jobs. But then if you want to go higher up the chain, it also goes to them to make sure that they're the ones putting the right people in that place. You know, it's not just around. And this is where, you know, as much as we all love HR, anybody HR listening, watching or whatever, we love you. We love HR. But a lot of these positions need to be filled by the people that are involved at ground level. You know, it's not about getting in there and kind of, including things and just following a job description. It's you got to get a feel for these people. Are they going to succeed? Are they going to fail? How are they going to deliver? And are they going to get up when they get knocked down and kind of crack on with everything that they need to do? That's a big point in my book.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to leave it for today. So thanks everyone for tuning in and being a part of this discussion. If you're watching the replay of this or listening to the podcast version of this, please feel free to reach out to us. So you can go to the beautiful site that Oliver put together, callcenterconfidence.com. You can email us at info@callcenterconfidence.com. So if you're watching this replay, you're catching us on the podcast, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. That goes to both of us. I will beat you to the punch and say that if you want to sign up for any updates, for calendar reminders, so that you know when we go live and get a whole string of reminders in your inbox from us, from Call Center Confidence, leading up to each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. GMT, go to luma.lu.ma/callcenterconfidence.com. What else?
That's straight to your calendar. I've been pretty slack. I will be honest. I definitely need to update our episodes on Instagram if you've been watching on there. I'll get around to that, I do promise. But our website is up to date with all the latest episodes. And within the next couple of hours, this episode will be on our website as well. And as Jason said, check out the podcast that he has ever so kindly put together. We're everywhere. It's all over the shop. It's Apple. It's Spotify. It's I have no idea what the other providers are, but it's out there. I'm not a podcast guru at all. But look, guys, message us, get in touch. And, you know, if there's anything you feel that you want to talk about, any subject matters that you feel are important to you, let us know and we will put that on there. We've still got a whole heap of content that we're going to be bringing you each and every single week. So come and join us live, 1 p.m. EST, 6 p.m. GMT. For that, well, that's only for the next month and a half before we, clocks change in the UK. Actually, no, it changes in the US. It's just me that doesn't change. I'm in a place where
it's
the time zone doesn't even change. Yeah. So, yeah, that's always going to be the same. It's just going to be different for me. So, yeah, that's it for me. It's always fun.
All right. That's it. Oliver, as always, thank you for being a part of this, the conversation. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Appreciate that. And I'll catch you next week, and we'll see everyone next Wednesday.
See you then.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.